You're listening to MotoGP OD, and I'm Jason DeSalvo, Factory Triumph Rider.
The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to MotoGP OD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today's Friday, January 22nd, 2010. And this is episode 211. And my name is Jules Cisek, and I'm here with Jim Race. Hey, Jim.
What's up, man? Hey, this is kind of a dedicated episode to a single series, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, we're going to be doing a bunch with World Supersport because we've got some great interviews for you guys, Jim. Introduce the interviews, maybe?
Sure. So this week we've got the preseason check-in with Eugene Laverty, who certainly will be a contender and perhaps the favorite for the year. And then we kind of got a special thing and a bit late and very, very new news, if you will, with Jason DeSalvo, who we haven't talked to in ages.
Right, and for those of you who don't know, Jason has been in AMA for like 8 seasons.
But he's also he in the past ran in 250 GP. He ran in the Spanish series in 125s as well as BSB. And in fact, he raced against, we're not sure, we tried to figure it out when I was talking to him, but he's already raced against one of the Laverty brothers.
Nice.
Pond. So,
he's done every kind of racing there is. I mean, I think he was dirt track racing when he was like 4 years old or something. I mean, the kid started riding motorcycles at like a year old or something ridiculous.
Yeah. And the cool thing is he really is. While he had a kind of a dream for a while to race superbikes that didn't work out that well, but man, he's a demon on the 600s. And so he's going to be paired with Chaz. This is on the BE1 Triumph team, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's been a kind of a weird little shakeup over there. So we know Chaz Davis is going to be there. Jason will be his teammate, but they expanded that team to 4 people. So it includes Sebastian Charpentier and David Salome. But the weird thing is,
there's a name missing.
Yeah, Gary McCoy.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a drag because I love having Gaz around. And I really hope that he lands somewhere. And he's not very happy about the whole thing. If you go to Gary McCoy's website, you know, it was really kind of a weird thing, you know, talking to Jason. When I talked to Jason, he told me that he kind of, you know, thought that he was actually going to be ending up on a 4-person team that included McCoy. And so when he found out that wasn't going to happen, he felt a little weird about it. But listen to the interview. You'll get a whole bunch of background. And Jason and I talk about a whole bunch of things going way back, including, I should warn you, Jules, there's a little bit of AMA stuff in there.
That's unavoidable when you're going to talk to Jason, right?
Yeah. But between the two interviews, man, Eugene is pumped. Jason is ready to go. And, you and I can't talk too much tonight because there's a lot of content there.
Yep. But before we do go into the interviews, we got a lot of responses for the top 10 riders of the decade.
Yeah.
But because the response has been good, I'd really like to see, let's do one, we're going to wait one more week before we actually tally up the results.
Yep.
We've got some really good ones this week, and now I'm pumped to see a little bit more. They're still coming in. There was just one that just came in as like we were starting the recording. So keep them coming, decade at MotoGPOD.com, and we love it when you guys actually like add like a little explanation of like, well, I put this guy in there because blah, blah, blah. It's fascinating stuff.
Yep.
And we'll include all those comments when we finally go through it.
Did you like my explanation for Melandri when I sent mine in today? I said something along the lines of everybody thought he was toast, but he wasn't even buttered yet.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's harder than you think to put that stuff down, because you want more than 10.
Exactly. You really have to, all of a sudden you're like, oh man, I left out some people that I absolutely loved.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But there's just not that much room.
It's an emotional statement about, for at least for me, you know, there's a lot of people that are basing it on statistics. I can't do it that way for me. For me, racing's all about emotion. And so when I wrote it basically based on the people that inspired me.
Right. Yeah, so please do the same. Send it in. And next week, we'll tally up the results.
Cool.
So we got this email from a guy named Ted who misspelled his email address. We were not able to reply to you, Ted. And I really both Jim and I replied to you at length, and then it bounced. So, but anyway, he was asking about, he was talking about the last week we were talking about the Dakar, and we kind of glanced over, the Mark Coma penalty. This is what Ted writes. He says, I was quite surprised by your comments about Coma in the Dakar rally. If I understand correctly, he was caught cheating due to an illegal tire change. You kind of dismissed that and mentioned that now we would see him throw caution to the wind since he had nothing to lose. If he did cheat, I think it's a pretty serious lack of sportsmanship. We often see riders get penalized for infractions they very likely had no clue was going on such as illegal crankshafts or fuel. In Coma's case, he had to know that the tire change took place. Just ignore the rules and hope no one would notice shows a lack of ethics. This is particularly important at the Dakar rally because the race stewards can't see every second of the race as they can in the circus events where cutting a chicane, for instance, is obvious for the world to see. It's a very good point, but I think, so what we were trying to reply when our emails bounced to you was, you know, I'm not 100% convinced that, actually, at this point, I am 100% convinced that he did get a tire change, but what I've been really hearing, and we'll talk about this in a future show more, when we talk about the car more, but, you know, this happens basically all the time, and people just don't get away with it because it is so hard to do. And, you know, he just didn't get away with it, and the race stewards slapped a penalty on him to show, like, hey, you know, if you get caught, you're screwed, basically.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that, you know, there's so many things about the Dakar rally that I think if I was really going to get that passionate about the rules and stuff, then I'd be outraged pretty much all the time because those guys, that the policeman on the I think it was the stage 12,
yeah,
there was that policeman that was directing the first four or five riders. He directed them in the wrong direction and they lost like, I don't know, like 20 minutes, and then the race steward said, hey, you know, we know exactly where they were and how much time they lost, so let's take that time away from their time and redo the standings. And I thought that was kind of, I mean, even though I felt bad for them for getting turned the wrong direction, I was like, you know, there's so much that changed because of that.
Sure.
They were riding in a different way. They were taking more chances, probably. I mean, basically, that kind of like result, you know, touch up,
yeah,
it's that kind of thing does, you know, kind of stink. I don't know. I mean, it's I'm not saying it's unfair. In fact, it's probably more fair, but where does that kind of rule fix up change? I mean, stop, where does it stop, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, navigation frankly is the number one skill that you have to have in that race.
Exactly, right.
And you'll see it all the time, and this last year you saw this all the time, is blindly following somebody else is a road to disaster.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, in this particular case, they actually had video from a helicopter of like five guys, like following. The first guy got the directions, and then the next guy just followed them, you know, so they all got lost together.
Yep. Well, I guess at least that way, you know, if you're going to die, you'll be around friends.
or competitors. So anyway, the Dakar rally ended. I want to, you know, big shout out to Toby Moody, who did a great job covering the thing in these little 30-minute spurts on Versus, but a huge thumbs down to Versus themselves, because twice they had some stupid college football show with this, you know, retired professional football player, American football player, like running around. Ah, man, and some show earlier went too long, and they let that run over the Dakar coverage. The little 30 minutes that they give to Dakar got covered with the stupid crap that we see on every freaking channel in American TV, and I didn't get to see two of the segments, including the very last one, which is like I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it.
For me, it was complete DVR fail.
Yeah,
it was like it picked up some of the episodes, other ones that didn't. You know, I still have faith in them because they're one of the few channels that we actually get here in the States that try and put the stuff out. But I want like a, you know, HD theater of this. You know, let's go.
Well, they had HD. I was watching HD.
Yeah, but I just want, you know, like Discovery to take it over.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, with the stuff they did and the fee that they had from like ITV4 for the TT last year, that's the quality of programming I want.
Right. Right. Yeah. So, you know, I ended up having to read the results on a freaking blog on basically like a blog entry on thecar.com. And I was bummed. I was bummed. So outrage all around. There. You're happy now, Ted? I'm outraged.
Yes. We're not going to take it anymore.
That's right. Okay. You want to jump into the interview with Eugene and Jason, and we'll come back and we'll just do a little bit of news and wrap it up.
Sounds good.
All right. Roll it.
Welcome to 2010 and a new interview with Eugene Lafferty. Haven't talked to you for a while. Happy New Year, Eugene.
Happy New Year to you. It's been a while.
Yeah. Man, and we're really close. You've got quite the weekend ahead of you with the first real test at Portimao. Are you looking forward to it?
I'm looking forward to going back to Portimao. The last time I rode a bike, last time I rode my 600 was in October there, and I dominated. So it's so nice to be hopping on the same bike again after a winter off, same team and everything, and I can just jump back in where I left off.
Have Brains and the boys been putting together some new kit for you?
Yeah, I've been fine-tuning it. There's been some development happening over the winter, but with the CDR, the amount of work that our team have done over the last few years, it's pretty much near its maximum potential, and we knew that this year, so it has been a matter of just getting that little bit extra, and I think Tinkari will be trying to do the same. Nobody's going to make any major jumps.
Yeah, you know, that's my same thought, is that you guys managed to beat Tenkata out of the gate last year and had an advantage for probably, I would guess, maybe the first two or three races before they... maybe
I'd say for the first 14 races. I think I did say that all year, that we had the best Honda out there in the grid, and it was incredible to get it to arrive at the first round and realize that, because over Tessa and your bike was good, but Tinkari haven't been so dominant over the years. It's only now that we look back and think, yeah, we beat Tinkari, but looking at it at that time, that was seen as an impossibility. So yeah, it was incredible to beat them at their own game in Supersport, but I know they're going to bounce back and be our main opponents for this season again.
And so you've got Lascores, you've got Safoaglu. Who else would you really rate as somebody that's going to pick on you?
For the championship, I think it is those two guys. I think it's going to be between us three, but there's others that can be up there from time to time. Depending on how good their package is and everything else, then they could pose a threat for the entire season. Obviously, someone who's going to be strong is Charles Davies, because Charles jumped on the bike and almost arrived in the podium right away in Imola. So he's got a lot of potential, obviously, as we all know. So it just depends on how good the triumph is going to be.
You know, it's interesting because Jason DeSalvo, who I'm actually talking to this afternoon, is going to be also writing for BE1. And he, you know, he's been running an AMA, which is kind of a, you know, a quiet corner series right now, frankly. But the guy is a demon on 600. So I will just tell you, keep your eyes open. Very smart, very smart, very calculating writer, much like you. So that should be fun. You guys are doing a 3-day test, and I took the time to look up the weather report, and it looks like it's going to be wet on Friday and Saturday. You guys are doing 3 days, right?
Yeah, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Okay.
But as you say, it's looking like there's going to be a lot of rain, which it's not ideal, but as long as we get one, maybe two dry sessions, would be nice to try some stuff. I'm happy to do a bit of testing in the wet as well, because our wet setting last year was diabolical. It really was poor. We didn't get much of a chance to work on it because there was very little wet track time. Nürburgring was one of the only real wet outings, and we really struggled there. But we had some things to try if it was wet ever again, and the rain stayed away. So, to be honest, I'll still be out there on track, don't worry.
And any major changes from last year? I'm assuming so Vodafone kind of kicked onto the team late on as far as sponsorship, but I mean, any major hardware changes?
No, in terms of sponsorship as well, it is still going to be mainly Parc Algar. And we've got Elf on board this year as well as our only sponsor.
Nice.
Which is nice to have a high profile sponsor as well. But Vodafone was for one round only, unfortunately. It's not going to be for the entire season in 2010. Would have been nice because it's such a high-profile sponsor, and also would have got some free phone bills. But unfortunately, I'm going to have to carry on paying for those.
All right. Well, that's very cool. So what have you been up to for training? I mean, you've been kind of screwed because the weather's been crap.
Yeah, it hasn't been good, especially over Christmas time. The big freeze we had, it was ridiculous, and I'd seen the temperatures that were forecast, and I thought, well, it's not such a big problem of being in Austria when it's even minus 16, and that was cold, but not really cold. But I think there's something about the weather over here, even when it gets to minus 4, minus 5, it is properly cold. I think the moisture in the air, so that was a bit of a problem for training. I did brave the outdoors a few times, because one of the days I seen the sun had come out, and I think mentally that just made me think that all was okay. So I didn't look at any temperature gauge. I wrapped up and put some heat packs in my shoes and heat packs in the hands, which stopped them from getting really numb. And I went out for about a 3-hour ride. It was only when I got back that day that Phil, the mechanics of the Parc Algar team, his brother-in-law, he remarked that it hadn't come anywhere near zero that day. It was well in the minuses, but I guess because in my head I seen the sun, all was well.
You know, there was part of me that was thinking, I wonder if there's anybody in the UK that sells snowmobiles.
Yeah, they would have made a fortune this year.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, generators too, I imagine. I mean, you guys just got incredibly nailed by one of the worst storms that I've ever seen in that part of the world.
Yeah, it's screwed the whole country. Even gritting the roads was a problem. Didn't have much of an effect once the temperatures dropped that low.
Well,
yeah, it stopped our trials riding fun even from time to time, because we did try and brave the snow, but trials riding is all about getting grip, and that wasn't possible.
Yeah, I think we need to have things melt down so you can do another video. I rewatched the other day the trials one that you did from last year, and you need to get your videographer skills back into.
No, that was only a quick job as well, and that was that's with a simple Windows Movie Maker or something. So
yeah.
Once I retire, maybe I'll do something properly. but we're planning the weekend after Portimao, 2 weekends time. We're planning a motocross weekend and getting a guy maybe to film it and make a video out of the few of us with my brother Michael. So that could be fun.
So
I've got my new Honda and the CRF250 sat in the garage looking pristine, but that isn't going to last long.
Okay, so there's two segues right there. The first one is Michael, and Michael and John, and you know, you guys are carrying on this tradition of racing each other. Michael's back in BSB with the Taz team, Relentless. That's going to be fun, isn't it?
It is going to be good. I'm looking forward to seeing it because over the years, the all three of us, there's always been one that's had a poor seat for that year. Last year it was Michael, and the years before it was me, the 2 years in 250.
Yeah.
And then before that, I was riding well in British Super Sport, but even Michael was having a tough time, and then John was having a tough time. So hopefully this is the first time we're all going to have a really good year, and John's staying put with Kawasaki. He's going to be a front runner in BSB, and I think Michael's going to be the real surprise of the year. He could be, I believe, one of the championship contenders. He's definitely going to do a similar job to what I did in World Supersport. He's going to challenge for the championship. I believe he could win it, but it's difficult to state that he is going to win it. I definitely reckon he's going to challenge for it.
Yeah, I've exchanged a couple of emails with him, and I'm like, you know, last year, Michael was everywhere, right?
Yeah, I think the only championship he didn't race in was a Welsh championship. I don't know, he was in everything.
Yeah. Best of luck to them, and I'm sure I'll try and get an opportunity to talk to Michael again this year. Okay, moving on. Tell me about, okay, so this is, I thought this was one of the weirdest things that I saw this year. Mm-hmm. You were on a team with Cal not too long ago.
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
That was the weekend after Nürburgring, actually. That was shortly before we went to Imola. Yeah. And it was strange because away from the race, and me and Cal can speak all right and get on well at the race. And it may be a different story because we're arch rivals, but that was fun. And I was happy because I was the fastest as well. So that was a nice little psychological edge.
As long as Fabian isn't around.
Yeah, exactly. that was a good day. It was incredible how much the carts changed over the course of the day. We had a two-hour practice session where we all changed. There was four drivers, myself and, you've seen in the video, Michael and John Reynolds and Kyle Crutchlow. But we had 2 hours of practice in the same cart and then a bloody six-hour endurance race. So the poor little carts were hammered come the end. They even had to stop mid-race. Every cart had to stop for an oil change to send us back out. But every time you get into the cart, it was a completely different vehicle. It was the wheels were pointing a different direction to what they were at the start, and the lap times dropped. But me and Michael were really fast there, actually. We were within half a tenth or so of the fastest ever lap there, and we were driving against them. And guys that race the GT and whatever else, so they were pretty pissed that we were kicking their ass.
But you got black flagged a few times, didn't you?
It was more Cal, actually, than me. That my black flag was in practice, and then another one I got black flagged for in the race was because of something that Michael had done in his previous stint. So I still had to do the black flag, but it was Cal, I think, John Reynolds. Head almost blew off as I'm on a black flag at Cal Dot because he's that hot-headed. He was in every 2 minutes, and it looked like we'd lost the race, and then the guys that were leading it had a bit of a problem, so that stopped JR from strangling Cal.
I saw a couple of pictures of it, but if you have any podium pictures, send them to me, and I'll put them up, because I just thought that looked like great fun. I mean, just a great time. Okay. Moving on, well, we already talked about the sponsors, so we already talked about Chaz and Jason DeSalvo and B1. It's going to be fun having Chaz there full-time, isn't it?
It is. It's a friend in the paddock, and, a fast one at that, so it's going to be strange racing with him because I've never raced with Chaz, but it's going to be nice to have him there, and we can bounce some ideas off each other and compare notes as we always do, because Chaz is a genuine character, and I can do that with Michael and John, and I'll be able to do that with Chaz as well.
Yeah, and you know that's not a team to be by any means disregarded. I mean, that platform seems to be evolving really well, and maybe challenging for the box too. So that'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, it's going to be a competitive championship, and with as you say, DeSalvo coming in. I know how fast DeSalvo is. I watch all the championships, so I know he's more than capable. And there's rumors of ex-World Supersport champion coming back as well. So
wait, you can't lay that out there without telling me who.
He's French.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I won't say any names, but I will let our listeners figure that out or send me an email and bug me about it.
Well, I don't know if these guys are riding at Portimao, actually, if DeSalvo's riding or if any of the other guys are, but I know there's a woman joining the squad, Paola Cazzola, is that right?
Yeah, and as I said to Pip, I'm like, she's kind of hot. So, that'll be interesting, and she's Italian, and which means she'll bring some money, which is kind of key right now.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, things the entire economic aspect of professional road racing has really shifted, hasn't it?
Yeah, it is a problem in the paddock, but I think we can manage, and it's just going to be a tough time for all teams.
Yeah.
There's very few teams that are resting on their laurels right now, and everyone's had to make cuts and take cuts, but it's all part of the game.
Do you have your whole crew coming back next year?
Yeah, we've got pretty much everyone there. The crew's a little bit smaller, but okay. It'll still be as effective.
That's kind of a sensitive question. Maybe I shouldn't ask that. Okay, so here's where I get to do the fun part. Congratulations, dude. What did you win the other night?
Oh yeah, the Irish Racer of the Year.
It looked like you were having a ton of fun.
Yeah, it was nice. I wasn't sure if I was going to win it because Johnny Ray had done so well this year, and also because road racing's huge in Northern Ireland and Ireland in general. And Ryan Farquhar had won more than 60 races this year, and me and Johnny couldn't really rival that. We only bloody well got 14, so we were never going to be able to rival Ryan's record. But it was nice to get it, and great for my sponsors, because in the last 2 years I've been at that awards, and everybody's been getting up on stage to accept awards, and I've brought my sponsors along, and I've been sat next to them having a beer with them, because I didn't have to do much award collecting, so it was nice for a change to be able to go up and lift the winner's prize.
Yeah, I mean, and Alistair Seeley as well. The Ian Wheeler, you know who he is.
I know him.
Yeah, took a bunch of pictures, and I was kind of following those literally live as they were going on, because he was putting them up live, and I saw you got you picked up the short circuit racer of the year, right? First.
Yeah, that was the first one.
Yeah, and then you got the top spot, and I'm like, yes.
No, that was cool. It was nice, and as I said, I had my sponsors there, but also Simon Buckmaster was there, and my parents and everybody, and Ian Wheeler, actually, he manages my affairs as well. So,
oh, okay.
It was, everyone was there, and everyone was pretty pleased, and everyone, I suppose, wanted a piece of me that night, so it was a bit of a late one before I get things read up, and we didn't actually really settle down and start actually having the night until 4 o'clock, which is pretty late, all considered, so it was really 3 hours of just having the fun and then bed, 3 hours sleep, and then I was never going to miss the breakfast in the hotel because there's a good old Ulster fry. I needed to get me sausages and bacon and all sorts in me. So I was never going to miss that with 2 hours sleep, but I think there was a few people with sore heads at breakfast last morning, but I was fresh as a daisy, so I was happy.
Yeah, I mean, I knew that you guys were all going to be in the morning, and it just the looks on people's faces that you can see from the pictures, I knew that it was going to be pain. There was pain going to be involved all the way around.
That's the thing. It's the Irish Racer Awards at the end of the day, and the bike guys like to go at it. We've got a charity motorsports dinner at the end of the year called the Sparks function, where car racers and bike racers are there, and the difference is obvious because the car racers sit quietly, and you don't even have to look you can just hear where the bike racers are, and it's usually by the bar. They're always having the crack, and that's the difference. Even last night we were back at exactly the same hotel at the Ramada for the Belfast Telegraph Sports Awards, and it was all just very sensible, and nobody got out of hand. Whereas you can be guaranteed with motorbike racers, there's always going to be a few people to tell stories about afterwards.
All right. Well, you know what? It's been awesome to be able to catch up with you, and we'll be doing it once again in 2010. And this you know, this is kind of, in a way, and I don't want to jinx anything, but it's, you know, it's your season, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe it's my year. That's why I wanted to say again, because going in the first year was always going to be tough to win the championship, although Cal did just that. But what me and Cal did really coming in and dominating was a one-off. So I wanted to stay with the same team, put everything that I learned into practice, and hopefully this will be my year. But I think a lot of people are under the impression that it's just a matter of turning up for me, but I know better than that. I think people seem to think, because I finished, I think, maybe 47 points ahead of Sofwa Ogley in third in the championship. So they think I'm going to run away with it. But when you look at the second half of the season, you'll soon see from pretty much from Donington, and maybe even shortly before that, last course was there every single round. And, of course, Sofwa Ogley is always going to be strong. Just think I had a difficult start to last season. So I'm not just saying those guys are going to challenge me for the sake of it. I firmly believe that it's going to be between the three of us.
I look back and I at 09, and what I think is that if not for a couple of incidents, you could have easily won anyway. Like you say, that is racing.
If McGranny had balls, she would be McGranda. That's the thing.
I'm going to leave that in.
A lot of people list them butts, but I never dwell on things even after my knee curve. By the time I got through the Park Fermé, I wasn't down about it. I knew, well, what I'll have to do in Portimao is win the race and leave it up to Cal to make the mistake, and he didn't. So that's racing. The mistakes are going to happen. I had 14 races, and I was the only one to finish all 14 in the points. I had a few offs. I had one at Donington and at Magny Cur, and then Valencia, I think, was more serious of the year, because Donington and Magny Cur, they were little incidents, and it can happen. Whereas Valencia, I just rode a really poor race at the start in damp conditions. I took it too easy, because I still thought I was on a 250 on slick tires instead of padded road tires. So that was, I feel Valencia was more well off the championship than the other two, but different people look at it different ways.
You know, I think, so this is probably insane because I'm just a club racer, but I want to give you some advice. Don't be crashing in warm-up anymore.
Oh, morning. I know that was a jinx, so that we figured out what it was. Because I'd leave it to warm-up, because we only had one session on a Friday.
Yeah.
If you have two sessions on a Friday, you go out in the first one,
right,
with your normal kit on to make sure you're comfortable, and then in the afternoon you can try some new kit out. But we didn't have that, so I didn't want to wear it on Saturday morning. I didn't want to wear it always the first session and so early in the morning. I just wanted to get straight in the kit and go, rather than bedding it in. So I always left it to morning warm up on Sunday, and I think three times in a row I had a crash with the new kit. So we knocked that in the head, and there's a few races where the only set of leathers that I had that were used, and the only set of boots that I had that were used, were the ones that I was wearing. So I went out in morning warm-up thinking, well, if I crashed, I'm going to have to go into the race with some new gear on. But I think that was the answer. Anytime I put new gear on for warm-up, I crashed it. So I went back to my old stuff anyway.
Did you pack your old blues and stuff just in case?
No, that's in a bonfire back home.
Nice. All right, I think that's the perfect ending. Eugene, thanks again. Always a pleasure to have you on the show. Always fun to talk to you, and best of luck this year, and have a great weekend.
Yes, do anything silly. I'll try and keep it rubber side down.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a bitchin' track. I'm gonna try and get over there this year, so hopefully we can meet up, and I can see you do what I know you're going to do.
Yeah, it's an awesome track for now. You have definitely glad I got to it. It's March 28th, so
yep.
You know the date.
Can you hear the clock ticking?
Yeah. It's not long coming around now.
Nope. All right. Thanks again, and we will talk to you in a month or so.
All right. Cheers, Jim. Catch you soon.
Cheers. Hey, this is MotoGPOD, and I have somebody online that I haven't talked to in pretty much forever. And it's kind of a special occasion in a way because it's Jason DeSalvo, and the last time I talked to him was when he was running in the AMA, which we don't talk about much on the show. But you've got a new ride, dude. You're going to World Supersport.
Yeah, they just announced it today, the Park and Go Factory Triumph team. So I'm really stoked about that. You know, I'm just really thankful to have a job in these trying times, and not only to have a job, but a great one with a fantastic team.
Yeah, it's by far it's not a lax team at all, and frankly, the results that they pulled out last year, I think, can be amplified by both you and Chaz, who's going to be your teammate. You know, I've heard whispers today that it might even be a four-man team.
Yep, that was in the official release. It's going to be David Salam.
Yeah, French.
And then also Sebastian Charpentier. So they've got a pretty stout package put together.
And that is the factory team. We're not talking privateer stuff. This is straight up hardcore.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, for me, it's just such an honor to be even thought of, you know, let alone to land the job on a factory team. It's in World Supersport. It's like a dream come true.
Yeah, and that is a championship that is so hotly contested, and frankly, over the last couple of years, has probably been some of the best racing you can watch.
Oh yeah, I mean, I watched the World Supersport stuff here. I've watched it for years, and you know, the racing in the past 3-4 seasons has been, I mean, second to none. It's pretty unbelievable.
It kind of drags you back to your hardcore FX days of yore, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's all rider in that class, you know. It's a lot like dirt track, you know, running close, banging bars. It's those guys don't mess around.
So the first time that you and I have kind of a strange past, because we bumped into each other on a nascent bulletin board system through some Google thing called Orkut. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, like 5 years ago. And I'm like, oh, there's a super sport racer popped on here. Okay, I'm going to like try and pull whatever I can out of him.
Yeah.
So let's talk about a couple of things. One of the questions that came to my mind, because you used to run 250 GP and like 125 GP in the BSB series, right?
Yep. Yeah, that was back in 2000, 2001. We did the British Championship, and we also contested the European and Spanish Championships, but on more of a limited schedule.
Okay. And so of the tracks that you'll be running this coming season, how many have you hit?
You know, I went on and counted, and I counted about half of them. Maybe a little less than half, maybe 6 out of the 13, or 5 out of the 12. I can't really get the schedule straight in my head. It's kind of crazy. It's only been, you know, 4 days since we heard about even
sure.
any possibility of riding in the series. And then, you know, so it's all kind of coming together last minute here. I'm still trying to get the schedule straight in my mind for this upcoming test. But yeah, so about half of them. I mean, that includes also Miller Motorsports Park, which I raced on in the AMA series. So, you know, I feel pretty good about that, not having to, you know, learn first, you know, from the beginning, all the tracks, although some of them, it's been a while since I've been on, and I'll definitely have to relearn them to some extent.
But, I mean, it does help, even if it's been years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, going around a track and learning a track to go and ride it at a very high pace it's almost like riding a bicycle. You might be a little rusty your first couple laps, but by about the third or fourth lap, you get back into the swing of things. And, you know, some tracks that I've been to, you know, that I haven't been to in quite a few years. I even remember some of my old brake markers if they're still there. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's always kind of inconvenient when they, you know, repaint a curb or they, you know, move some rock that you...
yeah, exactly. But thankfully, the ones that are still there, I'll be braking really, really deep because the last time I rode on them was on 125.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, you know what? Frankly, that is the method that... the World Supersport bikes are best ridden at. They're literally ridden like 250 GP bikes, the guys that dominate the series. So,
yeah.
I do that.
Yeah, I plan to try.
Let's drop back to without. I really don't want to go through the AMA stuff because, frankly, it's kind of disheartening. But
yeah.
I do want to ask you a bit about one thing: the spec tires this year. Those must have been weird because they were not what you had the year before.
Yeah, it was a little tough too because in 2008, running on the Superbike. You know, they made huge advancements in the level of the tires and the grip and the quality and the life. And then to go and run on the spec tire, it was tough, especially because at Daytona we ran on the same stuff that everyone ran on the year before because it's, you know, the Daytona spec tire has to be higher quality and much harder compounds than they use for the rest of the tracks. But then when we got to Cal Speedway, it was kind of like, whoa, you know, I think I went out, I did three laps and then fell down. And I was like, oh, this is a new animal. So, you know, just kind of adapting to it. And also the tire evolved over the season. It's not like we're stuck on the same things from the first weekend to the last weekend. By the end of the year, the tires were actually pretty decent. And it made for good racing, I'll say that. Everyone was so close, and that was, you know, kind of good for me, especially looking at what I'm up against this year, because, you know, the racing is going to be close again, and, you know, coming off a Superbike where races tend to get strung out, it was good to have a year on the 600 before jumping in with these boys over across the pond.
Well, you have a reputation as the pole meister.
Yeah. Yeah, I got that qualifying thing down.
I was at Sears this year on Saturday. I wasn't there Sunday, but you were leading that, and then I saw you lose. In fact, I was sitting in your guy's garage looking out the window, and then I saw you lose the front.
Yeah.
And I'm like, son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, we don't have to be polite here. Just
right on.
But yeah, you know, I mean, and that was the thing. And I was talking to John, your boss at the time, mm-hmm. and we were talking about tires, and it was like, damn, you know, the guys are having a struggle with what they anticipate is going to be something that provides them with the same level of grip or close to it as they had last year. And then they push harder and harder until, you know, it just goes away.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm glad to hear that they actually picked it up near the end of the year.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, the tires too, that's going to be a pretty key thing for me again this year, learning to ride on the new Pirelli tires, which, you know, I'm pretty excited about that. I, you know, it's really going to be my first foray into the Pirelli world, and you know, I'm interested to see what they're like, you know.
My understanding is they are glue.
Yeah, cool.
Absolute glue.
Cool. Right on.
Yeah. So how did you set this all up? You know, I know that you made a couple of trips over as the season went. You went to Portimao, right?
Actually, no, I didn't. I didn't venture across to Europe at all this year. The last time I was over would have been 2008. I went over for the Donington race. And actually, you know, I mean, we made quite a few contacts that race, just being over there and kind of being a part of things. And there was a big buzz about Ben Spies going over there at the time. And then I think after, you know, he went over, it kind of almost made it a little bit easier for American riders to come over because it really, you know, showcased the quality of the talent in the series, you know, the quality of the riders. And, you know, I think that helped for sure. And then, you know, some of the contacts that we made or, you know, built on, kind of cultivated while we were over there, sort of finally this year paid some dividends, and we were able to secure this ride.
You know, and having Roger over there should be fun too.
Yeah. I was actually quoted earlier in an interview, you know, saying that hopefully, you know, we can set aside our differences since we're not racing against each other and be buddies for the year. So, you know, and it was funny because I didn't actually intend that to be like a quote, but they quoted me on it anyways. But, you know, it's the truth.
Let me guess. Was that with Dean?
No. Okay. That was with somebody else. I can't remember. It's been like such a blur since about, I don't know, noon yesterday when the initial information kind of leaked out. But you know, it's the truth. You know, as Americans over there together, I think, you know, I'd like to be buddies with them. And, you know, we've had some run-ins in the past and everything. We've also had some, like, incredibly close, just good races.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's such a competitor, too. I mean, all the Haydens are. So, you know, yeah, it'll be good to have another American over there in the series. And then Chaz, too, I mean, he's practically American, spending, you know, multiple years in the U.S. racing. So it'll be good to have him as a teammate as well.
Yeah, I sent you a list of my threats for you to deal with next year. Along with sort of, you know, personalities of each, because I've been really deep into World Supersport over the last couple of years as far as following it and reporting on it. Can I ask you a hard question?
If you must.
Tell me about the hacking incident at Fontucky.
You know, we have history, and you know, the funny thing with history is that it just sticks around, man. It's just hard to get rid of. And, you know, it was just an incident, you know. It was unfortunate about the penalty, but also at the same time, fortunate that it got lifted and Jamie was able to compete and come and race again, you know. As much as Jamie and I may have animosity towards each other, I guarantee, I don't know if it's the same for him, but, you know, he's my favorite person to see on the racetrack because it's just so much more motivation to, you know, step up the pace or step up the game and make a pass or you know, set a fast lap, whatever it may be. So, you know, it's all in good clean rivalry-ness.
You're never going to talk to me again after asking that question, are you?
Nah, it's okay. You're not the first one to ask it.
Do you remember when I sent you an email and I posed a question to you that if Yamaha put together a 250 GP team, would you go to it?
Yeah.
And you said yes, if it was basically a factory supported ride, right?
Yep. That was the thing, because parts were somewhat tough to come by for those bikes.
Yeah. And so this year I found it kind of amazing because the RS250, the Honda RS250, with Hero on board, won that championship in the last year that it was around, with Aprilia basically lining out the entire rest of the grid. Did that surprise you?
You know, as much as I like to follow, you know, the support classes in GP, I really just didn't get a chance to this year. But you know, that statement alone, yeah, that's definitely surprising because I did, you know, I was aware that the grid was mainly Aprilia's. To be honest, I didn't even know Honda won. But that's very surprising. I mean, but it shows the kind of dedication, that, you know, if a brand has that dedication to winning, you know, what it can do, you know?
Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah, no doubt. I have my doubts, but they essentially said that, you know, the bike really hasn't had any development for 3 years. And then because he knew the class was going away, it was like, you know, was Honda trying to, you know, put their stamp on it before it's gone? And I'm guessing, and you can set me straight on this if I'm wrong, that you were also looking at the Moto 2 side.
Yeah, I mean, that was something that I was pretty excited about, that class. And I sniffed around a little bit for rides in the series. It's pretty tough, though. You know, a lot of the teams need backing.
Right.
They really like, you know, their riders to come with sponsors attached to it. And for, you know, maybe a Spanish rider or Italian rider, it's a little bit easier, you know, kind of being over there and being in the environment all the time,
mm-hmm.
where the companies are more likely to spend their money on MotoGP racing. I mean, I can't really off the top of my head name one company in America that would really be interested in backing a sort of program like that, unfortunately.
So I'm assuming that you still have to bring something to the ride that you're heading to. Is that?
No, I mean, this team's very well funded. The
nice.
The Park and Go sponsorship is really just an incredible, you know, deal for this whole thing. And you know, I'm not privy to all the inner workings of it. You know, as far as where the backing comes from, but. You know, I assume being having the title sponsor and being a factory team, that must help too some.
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems like, you know, it's funny. When the economy is down is actually the best time for teams to build if they have the capability of doing so.
Well,
because,
yeah. And, yeah, you know, too, Triumph, actually, they had I think a record-breaking, maybe not a record-breaking, but they had growth in the fourth quarter of this past year, which was, you know, as you know, uncommon in any area of business, let alone recreational vehicles such as motorcycles. But I think I even, you know, want to go as far as to say I saw one statistic that said they were second in the UK only to Honda as far as units sold in the fourth quarter in December of 2009.
Yeah, I mean it, and it's a, you know, it doesn't seem like everybody recognizes that, but I know for a fact that when you're in down point, if you have the opportunity to promote within your budget, it's the best time to build, because basically what happens is when the economy picks back up, it catches back up to you, and it's like you're basically on the wave already.
Yeah, exactly. It just puts you, you know, gives you a little head start on everybody else. So, you know, I'm really excited for Triumph and for the program that they've put together. I mean, it sounds pretty incredible. You know, it's yet to be seen, but just in talking, it sounds great. And, you know, it seems like they've spent money in all the right places and are, you know, really trying to put together a package to kind of set themselves up for competition. For the next decade.
And the bike itself is, frankly, a very good platform. You saw, I'm sure you saw, what Chaz did. Chaz stepped over at the end of the season and was immediately fast.
Yeah.
And that's got to be kind of exciting for you.
Oh, for sure. Exciting and inspirational, you know, to know that one of my fellow competitors that I raced against all year here went over and did what he did. I mean, that's instant motivation to go over and try to be fast straight away. You know, I mean, it was a bike that he'd never ridden except for maybe one test and a track he'd never ridden except for maybe one test. And he had great results on it. You know, I mean, it's a really incredible weekend he had there at the end of the 2009 season.
Yeah. I mean, he was damn close to challenging for the podium, and you just, you look at that from an outside perspective, and it's just mind-boggling.
Mm.
That just doesn't happen. All right. So the final question. He's like, uh-oh.
Yeah. What now?
No. This is old school.
Yeah.
Tell me about the beard.
The beard.
Mr. T.
Oh, man, that's funny. I was just talking to one of my buddies today about that. Actually, my former coach and trainer, mentor, best friend, Jeff Haney. Someone dug up an old picture of him with a beard and back from, I don't know, the 80s. And it was him and Doug Chandler, and he's got his old green Unipro leathers on, and he's got this beard, and someone made a comment on it on a big email, and he put one word, winter. And, you know, it was just something I had going. It was a lot of fun. You know, I was training really hard that off season. And it was like, at first I was just so focused on the training. It was always the training and eating and training and doing everything like very regimented. After about a month, I realized I'd forgotten to shave, you know? And then I was like, oh man, I got this cool beard going on. And I just kind of kept it. It was weird. It was like this weird, you know, us athletes, we do weird stuff for weird reasons. And I don't know, it was just kind of symbolic of my training and growth, you know, so to say. But then I definitely got a little carried away with it. Some gentleman posted on one of the web forums a picture of him and I at Barber, where I scored my second podium of the 08 season. And I mean, that was like the race, the last race that I had it. And it was just unbelievably huge. I mean, you know, until I trimmed it up when I did the Mr. T thing. And, but it was just so big. I mean, it actually reminded me a lot of Giovanni Bassai when he came
exactly.
to the American race. And he
exactly.
had this crazy mountain man beard. And, but yeah, I mean, I don't really regret it. It was a lot of fun. It kind of, I think it freaked people out sometimes. And it was like, it was so big, but, it was fun though.
It did. And that was the same time that you ended up in kind of a weird little spat with Matt Mladen and his crew with the gnome, right?
Yeah. That was kind of bizarre too. You know, we took the gnome, we stole him. We kidnapped him, held him hostage. I had him in my house in Vegas for a while. And, I actually took a bunch of pictures with him. Like, you know, I took him out golfing with me and I had him in my golf bag, you know, like the Expedia commercial. And there was a picture, we had him on the waterfalls out and back by the pool, and we were hanging out by the pool grilling and, you know, all kinds of like funny stuff. And we were going to like auction him off at the end of the year for charity, but then, I don't know, something happened and he just disappeared. I have no idea where he went. We brought him to a track and we gave him back to the Suzuki team, and on the premise that they could use it for whatever promotional, you know, things that they wanted to do for the rest of the year. But then at the end of the year, we were going to both kind of mutually auction them off, but he just kind of got lost in the shuffle, I guess.
So there was actually cooperation on the sort of spat front.
In the end, for sure. I mean, at first, you know, it was like, wow, you know, I was just myself. I was honored to be targeted by Matt Mladen. You know, that was an honor for me. And in the end, yeah, it was just good fun because, you know, it is what you make of it. And
yeah,
kinda, we just turned it into fun. It was a good laugh.
So last year, without talking about AMA too much,
yep.
What was a damn good season. You had a hell of a teammate too with Martin.
Yeah. Martin is like just such a competitor, you know, I mean, just fierce and, you know, trying to ride with the broken hand and everything at the end of the year. And, always pushed so hard, you know, I'd be behind him or something in a race, you know, trying to make a pass for the lead or something. And, you know, just unbelievably, you know, always sliding the bike and doing stuff, you know, just amazing things with the motorcycle. And, you know, it was good to have him as a teammate for sure. I really think he would be a good fit as well in the World Super Sport Series.
Oh, no doubt. And I you know, I haven't talked to John. I talked to him about something else today, but that will be interesting. And give me your personal thoughts, if you would. Yeah, you're free to do it now. on Danny and the 1125.
No, you know, it was a good season run by the Richie Morris program. I mean, really, for those guys to come out and in 1 year, you know, do the things that they did, that was pretty impressive, honestly. And actually, I don't know if you remember, but I got to ride the bike after the season.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and I mean, to be quite honest, it wasn't as fast as I think everyone thought it was. But I mean, it had other strong points. So it wasn't like it was just this big, you know, gnarly, you know, leader bike that was just ripping your arms off coming out of the corners. It was more subtle than that. And you really did have to ride it a certain way to make it effective. And I think Danny did a good job of that throughout the season. And definitely, you know, with the mid-range, it made it a tough bike to compete against.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, thankfully from what I've heard so far this year, I've heard that the Triumph has the mid-range advantage. So hopefully I'll be able to take it, you know, make use of that this season and make some people's lives as hard as mine was last year chasing Kenny on the 1125.
An extra 75cc. You know, the thing that I always could see, and it was pretty obvious visually, was that corner entry on the 1125 was a problem. You'd get in and it didn't really want to stop, or if it did, it did it in a very lazy manner.
Yeah. It was all, you know, that thing was just all about getting it turned through the middle of the corner and then just getting it, you know, kind of pointed in the direction you want to go. And it really was, you know, somewhat like a gun. You know, I think just some people, you know, attributed it more to rocket launcher, you know, but it was just more like a shotgun. You know, you just get pointed and just pull the trigger, and it went where you had it pointed, and it didn't like to go anywhere else other than that.
Cool. Yeah. Well, I think that's, oh yeah, that is near the end of the list of my questions, but I had a whole page. That's not bad.
We ripped through those things.
Yeah, I think we covered a fair amount of ground, didn't we?
Yeah.
Best of luck this year. You've got a great teammate and a great team and a great platform to work on. So go rock, dude.
Right on. We'll do our best.
Okay. Talk to you soon.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Wow. Thanks very much to Eugene and to Jason and to Jim for catching up with those guys. That was awesome stuff, dude.
Thanks.
All right. We got some news. This is kind of it was kind of crazy because Valentino Rossi was in a red suit this week. And, you know, he had the appendicitis too. Actually, we didn't talk about that last week because it happened just as we were going to print. And, yeah, he came down with appendicitis, had an operation, I guess.
No, he didn't.
What's the deal? What exactly happened? I don't even know.
Yeah, no, so...
Dr. Costa, I know, like, was involved.
Yeah, it's really weird, and it actually created, I forgot about that, and thank you for bringing it up. It created a bit of a stir. So people say when you get the norm when you get appendicitis is you have it taken out, right?
Yeah, because, I went through this. I was, like, 3 years old, so I don't remember anything except this nurse standing over me and screaming and telling me that if I don't shut up that she's going to give me the shot she's about to give me in my tongue.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. At Polish, you know, hospitals. What can you do?
No. So that's, dude, good thing you moved.
yep.
The normal logic of things is that if you get appendicitis, you have it removed. Because if not, it can lead to some very serious complications. But he, through his doctor's advice, chose to use medication to try and deal with it. And not have it removed, including advice from Dr. Costa. Now, I'm no doctor, right? Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. But the thing was, is that he was scheduled to run the Ferrari this week.
I was just going to say that. So yeah. You think that he actually basically postponed it. Maybe, I mean, and now he might have to go and get it taken out, but because he didn't want to miss a test, huh?
Yeah. This test is not... it's not a test. It's basically a present is
right.
what it is.
Right.
And there was a really cool picture of him on MotoGP.com today. But it was weird in a really kind of strange way because...
He's all red.
He's all red. Well, you can just see his helmet, but the car is red. It's got the Marlboro barcode on it.
Right, exactly.
And all the wrenches around it are in red, and it just looks weird, and it kind of gets your mind in a gear of, huh.
Yeah, exactly. You know, exactly.
Huh. I wonder what he'd look like on a Ducati. None of the colors in his helmet would match, though, you know.
That's true. That's true.
And it was neat. It was a very surreal picture because you couldn't see anything of him except for like three quarters of his helmet. We'll link to that in the show.
Cool.
But, no words on the times. It was a two-year-old car. It literally was just kind of a gift for, you know, winning the world championship once again. And, but it's neat, you know, hey, geez, I'll take a gift like that.
It's kind of funny that the gift came from, you know, a team that's sponsored by the team that kind of defeated. So twice now.
It's an Italian thing, I think.
Yeah. I totally agree.
Yeah.
I totally agree.
Well, we did talk about that part last week, that the Stefano Domenicali even mentioned during the Room 2010 event, which we've got some great pictures from that from last Friday, and I'll talk about that shortly, said that he wanted to have a third car for Valle, even though Valle says he just wants to go do rally.
Mm. They're going to keep a seat open just in case.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yep.
Who knows? So you want to talk about Vroom? Vroom?
Yeah, let's talk about Vroom. It was fun.
It was. And it wasn't quite as crazy as, you know, maybe some of the prior years. It was maybe a little bit more sedate. But they did, of course, on the frozen lake, they threw on two events. They threw on one, which was a car race between the four drivers and riders. And I think Massa won that one. There were these little Fiats, kind of, you know, spike tires outfitted, kind of rally-ish looking cars. They even had a jump, I think, in that race. And then the thing that really surprised me was the kart race, and Nicky Hayden won that.
Right, right.
And
he beat Alonso and Massa and those guys.
Yeah. Nicky said, fair play, he said that he thought the other guys didn't take it seriously, but I saw some video from it. We'll link to the videos as well. He was hanging it out big time, and they kind of, our foreign listeners may laugh because the kart race was essentially kind of an oval. So he's really good at turning left from his dirt track days. It was big fun. I love the stuff they do on that frozen.
Well, it's kind of what happened at Laguna too. Remember with Rossi, Roberts Sr. and Lawson and Rainey, when they went go, Rossi freaking took off, and the other three guys were like trying to stick together so they could get nice, good pictures together, you know? And Rossi's like, woo, I win.
I think they circulated for one lap, and then Rossi just put the hammer down.
Right. They were never together, dude. I was there really? At the Corkscrew taking pictures, and Rossi was way ahead on the first lap. It was hilarious. And then, you know, and I was like, man, is he really that fast? And then afterwards I heard, I was like, of course, yeah. I mean, you know, it's typical. He's still racing. Those guys are just having fun.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, you know.
I'm sure that they picked up the pace and started racing too, because, I mean, those guys don't stop racing ever.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. nobody likes to see anybody disappearing in the distance, and those are very talented people. I mean, as we saw what Kenny Sr. did at Indy, right?
Exactly.
You know, it's
exactly.
Like, it just, let's go.
He didn't have to go that fast.
He didn't.
You know?
Yeah. No, I mean,
I was risking life and limb.
I was shocked that he went that balls out.
Yeah.
I really was. And damn you, you were there to see it.
I was.
Okay.
Yeah, it was, so anyway, it was cool. To me, it was great to see Nikki beat Alonzo, especially because Alonzo is famous for, back in, I think, 2006, saying, hey, you know, put me on a MotoGP bike, and within 3 weeks, I'm going to be winning races.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't think so, buddy.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
The other way, yeah, but not to bikes.
So the other thing that we have going on is we do have a test this weekend. We've got a 3-day test at Portimao for World Superbike and World Supersport. So both Eugene and Jason, as we just talked to, will be there, as well as pretty much all of the World Superbike teams. It's a 3-day test. Friday and Saturday are supposed to be wet, and Sunday is supposed to be dry, which is actually good, frankly. They'll get experience on all of it. And as Eugene said, you know, they didn't have a lot of chance last year to get a lot of wet testing experience. Everything that they had to deal with was usually on race day, not even in practice. And he said Nürburgring. So we're going to get our first toe in the pond this weekend. I'm really excited about it.
Me too. And especially because they're going to be doing it online for free. Although I'm not really sure if that actually includes video. It's unclear from the release.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. The press release they sent out for the release this weekend. It depends if they'll give it to us here in America. Well, you know, it's all down to speed. If they want.
Yeah. Exactly. But at least there'll be timing and stuff like that. So you know, considering that we have nothing right now, it's going to be awesome.
Yes, we get something. How exciting!
Yeah. Yep.
And folks, I hope you enjoyed the interviews. It was great for both of those guys to come on basically pretty short notice. Hey, the season's ramping up, isn't it?
Yeah. Thanks, Jim.
Sure.
All right. Take care.
Ciao.
MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sport SL. The MotoGP OD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGP OD isn't affiliated with any of them. The MotoGP OD podcast was created by Bob Hayes. It is co-hosted by Jules Chisick and Jim Race. The website was built by Simon Roberts. Music by Jules Chisick. Jim Race deals with public relations, and the podcast is produced by Jules
and Zorg the Destroyer.